always do the right thing, communicate open and honestly, be yourself, like very standard, easy kinds of things. A lot of these kids, they see through Instagram and through social media these curated images of people who are trying to present a certain level of success. And it's difficult for them to really ascertain what's real and how they got there and whatever, because a lot of it is just absolute BS. And so for me, I really hammer home the time that it takes, the investment in yourself, the investment in your business, in the sense of, like, you know, caring about the reputational equity that you build.
You are listening to Fingerprints on Success, the podcast dedicated to highlighting unique imprints left by business leaders, mentors, and successful entrepreneurs. In this show, we'll be bringing on a diverse range of serial entrepreneurs, professionals, leaders, and coaches to uncover the secrets behind achieving success both professionally and personally. Guiding you on this podcast is none other than Bill Barrett, an award-winning corporate and business law attorney and CEO of the law firm Mandelbaum Barrett PC, where he and his team have provided a full array of legal services to both businesses and individuals throughout the country. Get ready and let's get to the show.
Hey everyone, it's Bill Barrett. And if you're on Instagram, chances are you may have come across the one and only Bloody Tooth Guy. And if not, do yourself a favor, look him up, because today we've got a special guest who's known by that very moniker. Dr. Jason Auerbach, aka Instagram's Bloody Tooth Guy, is not only a social media sensation, but also a world-class oral surgeon and a serial entrepreneur. But that's not all. Dr. Auerbach is also the CEO of Max Oral Surgery, a leading oral surgery platform in the Northeast. And he's grown this platform from his original office in 2007 to currently 23 locations and still growing. This is an episode you will not want to miss with a true innovator in the world of oral surgery and healthcare in general. Let's unravel the fingerprints on success of Dr. Jason Auerbach. Dr. Jason Auerbach, welcome to Fingerprints on Success. I'm so glad you could join us today.
Great to be here, Bill. Thank you so much. I'm actually really looking forward to this.
So now you have a lot of different personalities. I happen to know you, full disclosure to the audience, for a lot of years. You know, we'll talk a little bit later on maybe about your social media presence. But where I'd really love to start, especially for some of our entrepreneurs who don't know you or haven't met you, to kind of talk a little bit about your journey. I mean, I happen to have been on this journey with you, remembering when you were an associate oral surgeon, kind of fresh out of at residency, and have watched you now grow an organization to over 20 locations. So, you know, share with everybody a little bit about that journey and kind of, you know, how you got to be where you are now.
So I think from a professional standpoint, you know, my journey is not dissimilar from most, where many people who are in positions like I am have ended up so, kind of despite some early failures or early perceived failures. And I feel like if you look back at my history in life, most of my success has come off the heels of a perceived failure, something that I really wanted that I did not get. And that actually is when we first met. I met you. You were representing an oral surgeon for whom I was working, who I had a very good relationship with, who, like many, While his intentions were, I believe, totally pure and right, things did just not work out the way that we anticipated. So as an associate, my goal was to become a partner in his office and tried really hard to do that. And the practice grew while we were together. But just the unfortunate reality at the time was that it just didn't make sense for him at the time to do it, which worked to my benefit. So in February of 2007, we kind of went in different ways. And at the time, I was working in 9 different locations, itinerant as a surgeon up in the Bronx or down in South Jersey or upstate New York. And I found some space here in River Edge, New Jersey, which is in Bergen County. And over the course of about a year and a half, I got rid of a bunch of those kind of daily positions and was able to build a practice where I just focused on oral maxillofacial surgery here. And then subsequently grew the business grew the practice Riverside Oral Surgery to 12 locations before we brought on private equity and built the platform Max, which is now not well over 20, but 23 locations and growing.
So, you know, that kind of rapid growth and success, you know, it's very uncommon. And, you know, when you think back and reflect on the journey, you think you had certain mindsets or kind of just like, you know, maybe at the time you didn't know they were your mindset, but when you think about it now, you feel like, you know, these couple of characteristics of what I do or how I do it are a big factor in my success.
Yeah, I mean, I think a big factor in my success is really this concept. This is going to sound kind of like hyperbole and whatever, but really just always trying to do the right thing. I built Riverside Oral Surgery by honing what I perceived to be the optimal patient experience. I saw kind of a focus in healthcare in the early 2000s was kind of still very antiquated way of doing things. It was like, you know, the older front desk person sitting behind a sliding glass window, a little bit annoyed that you were even in the office. And I kind of opened it up. I, you know, fortunate enough to live and exist inside of New York City, the hospitality industry and the boutique hotel and the spa-like experience. And this is what I was trying to do. And it really wasn't as commonplace then as it is now. And I don't think that I was you know, responsible for what has happened in healthcare overall, but I will say that I saw the need for it and I adapted as such. So the first practice I built here in River Ridge, which is where I'm sitting now, open space concept, light colors, progressive, you know, just a different kind of way of presenting the service. And I think that has helped me. My biggest kind of secret sauce, I talk about this, is really kind of this chip on my shoulder. I've had it since I've been a young child. I've always felt that I've had to kind of prove that I could do something for myself. I don't come from, I mean, my father and mother worked very, very hard and were amazing to me and for me, but I don't come from a lot. And so I saw a lot around me and I wanted it. And I didn't necessarily know how I was going to do it, but I did know that I was going to do whatever it took to get there. So I've surrounded myself with good people. I focused on the right things, I believe, but I still have a ton to do. So
do you like consciously think about how you're going to do the next biggest, better thing or introduce something into the way you do business that others aren't doing? Like, is that a thing that you consciously do or is it just like happen organically?
I see myself somewhat of a, you know, I don't know if this comes off wrong, but I see myself as a little bit of like of a creative, right? So the way that things come to me, by and large, are just by inspiration in a moment. I could be sitting in an office experiencing a service and I realize, oh, this could be a better way of doing it, or I really dislike the way that it's being done here. And I think that by honing it or by switching it around that I could actually improve upon this and introduce it to my business. So I'm inspired by things that are around me all the time. So I do think a lot of my success or the way that I do business is really kind of looking at things from a different eye, adapting to what I think or adapting them to how I feel like we could use them and improving upon them rather than being this kind of like overtly planned guy. It's just not who I am. It's actually why I think I can't do my own podcast, because I would have to actually prepare for it. Otherwise, I would just have these rambling conversations like you're about to experience.
Well, we're not rambling that much yet. So we're doing okay. Rambling.
You're going to like lock me in, and I respect that. I need that. But just the way my brain works, you know.
Would you classify yourself as a risk taker? You know,
yes.
When you,
yeah, very much so. I take calculated risk. I'm not a gambler. Actually a gambler, meaning I don't really gamble on anything, and I don't do it with my business either. I take calculated risk. I see a tremendous upside. The way I look at business is not at the bottom line. I oftentimes speak, and this is probably a lot of founders, entrepreneurs look at it like this. You know, I look at reputational equity. I look at revenue. I look at driving patients and creating the best possible patient experience. I never, ever, forever looked at like, how does this affect my bottom line? So long as we were earning enough money to put money back into the business and to create more opportunity and better experiences, and that I was able to live the life that I was hoping to live, I was totally fine. And so I am not risk averse at all. I think about the way things could go wrong, and it's been to my advantage.
You know, one of the things that I wrestle with, and I wonder if you do as well, is that we're in professions, me as a lawyer and you as an oral surgeon, where although completely different universes, right? What's the same about it is we are often the producer. And a lot of times if we've been, you know, successful in developing our businesses, we're pretty darn good producers and actually good at, quote, doing the work. But on the flip side, we're building businesses, we're running businesses. And, you know, I don't think that that's, I think there's a lot of people who fall into that. How do you kind of reconcile the two? And do you have a love for one more than the other? Or, you know, like, you know, that's, it's not an easy thing. I think a lot of our entrepreneurs out there fall into this bucket. So I'd be curious to hear, you know, your take on it.
The balance is something I struggle with every day. I'm dealing with it today, as I sit here. I love oral surgery. I love treating patients. I love the art of the procedure and all of that. And I really love building the business. I love business development. I love networking with human beings and learning and talking and just kind of doing what I do. I don't care for the accounting and the finance behind what I do. And so I've built a very, very strong team around me to support me in that way. I think, you know, a lot of people talk about work-life balance, work-life harmony. For me, it's like all within the work. Where do I find that balance? And I don't think I've yet answered that. I certainly have not yet answered that question. I think as time goes on, I'm finding myself more valuable to the business, not with the patients, but I struggle personally because I do love seeing the patients. I think, you know, as time goes on, you become more comfortable with who you are. You're much more self-reflective and you're much more self-aware. And as such, you find yourself, at least I have found myself, like my life is going in the direction that I think is where my aptitude and my passion combine and I can do the best I can do. But I don't think it's a struggle I'll ever totally resolve. And I think ultimately, if I were focused solely on the business of oral maxillofacial surgery, which, by the way, I used to perceive as only delivery of care, not, you know, business operations as they are such. If I was only to focus on that, I would really miss treating patients. So I don't think I'll ever, you know, when people see what I've done, what we as an organization have accomplished, they question, like, why are you still treating patients? Why are you at the church? As though that's some sort of like inferior way to exist. I don't see it that way at all. I love, as I've said this now four times, I love seeing patients, and I will continue to do that as long as I can and as long as it's what's best for my patients.
Yeah, no, I can very much relate to that because I still enjoy advising clients and putting deals together and working on it. I mean, I you do sometimes reach a point where you need to have other people because you also don't want to disappoint people. But I get it. You know, it's interesting. One of my friends who runs a large, successful business and has couple hundred people working for him talks about how people should abandon the idea of work-life balance and all that. And he just says, like, it's work, it's life. I just throw it all in one bucket and say, this is me. And, you know, it's just all part. I don't have to separate them. And I'm kind of starting to try to, I'm connecting with that these days. Right. I think that he may be onto something. I don't know.
I mean, I see it that way. I don't want to cut you off, but I see it that way. I think, you know, my wife and kids might disagree with that way of looking at things. And you know, certain sacrifices have been made in that world. Sure. But I will tell you that, you know, I say this, like, your passion chooses you, right? Like, I couldn't be any other thing. I couldn't just sit around at home and like not do what I do. When I'm there, something comes in my brain, it's in now in my notes in the phone, and then I'm sending an email or a text or whatever it is. It's constant. And I think most people who are like us are like that, where you can't really turn it off. And it's not like you don't want to at times, but it just is what it is. Like if I sit on a beach for too long, I'm now focused on, you know, how that person who brought me the beverage did it in such a way that I could somehow adapt that to the practice. You know, it's a little crazy.
No, it's like staying at the Four Seasons, right? I'm always like, they always do something that kind of blows me away on the, and every time I'm like, how is that going to translate into my client experience, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, and I'm not the only one, by the way, because organizations around the world try to rip them off. Apparently, there's actually books on it, which I didn't know until someone recently told me. So let me twist it in another way as we talk about all sorts of successful things. If you reflect back and think, you know, what are maybe some pitfalls or things that when you reflect back, you wish you didn't do? Or if Dr. Jason Auerbach today was advising, you know, Jason Auerbach from 10, 20 years ago, you know, what would he tell him not to do?
So if I were advising myself, and this is probably an answer most people would give, and I don't like to give the answers that are just generally kind of canned answers, but this is, I would have taken more risk. I would have done more earlier. I would have put myself out there a little bit more. I also probably would have been more comfortable with some of the, I would have learned more about the mechanics of business that I had to give to other people. And I think I would have probably had a more of a rounded full skill set as it relates to being kind of an executive type. I know where my strengths lie and I know where they don't. And so maybe that's not even the right answer, but the way I feel about it, the primary thing I would have told my younger self is take the risk. Because if I've found anything, it's that the only things I really regret are the things that I didn't do, the opportunities I didn't take advantage of that I knew I should have, or that I thought maybe I couldn't handle at the time. I mean, if you remember, I'll speak about a very specific thing. I was working in the Bronx and I was working with a guy there who had a tremendous reputation. He had a building and a practice that he wanted to sell to me. But I was buying my second practice here in New Jersey, and I thought like I didn't have the bandwidth to do both. And like retrospectively, I mean, I should have done both. You know, again, just a small example, but you don't necessarily know what you're capable of until you put yourself out there and actually take the first step. And so do more, take more risk, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, you know, so most people don't actually answer it that way. So it's actually a very good answer or different answer. And look, I mean, being an entrepreneur, right, is the art of taking risks, really. You know, it's you're always navigating some type of level of risk tolerance. Otherwise, you wouldn't be in your own business. You know, one of the things that comes up a lot, especially, you know, we're in similar age bracket, you know, not too far off from each other. And there's a lot of people that they're either comfortable and having a lot of success with social media, for example. And there's some who are not comfortable in that space. So, you know, the bloody tooth guy, who you are also known as, and has become a really another wildly successful piece of your, I mean, I guess I'll call it persona, or kind of, you know, kind of who you are in your profession. Share that story a little bit with people. I mean, because, you know, that, you know, is not certainly not common, and it continues to be a growing thing for you. I'd love for you to tell people a little bit about the bloody tooth guy.
Sure. So the bloody tooth guy is another creative outlet for me. It started also by chance. It started in 2015 in February. I was sitting right here and I was talking about the fact with my partner about the fact that there's this person who's a dermatologist on Instagram, which, by the way, not everyone knew what Instagram was at the time. Certainly our generation. I mean, my kids knew, but very few other people. And that person's name was Dr. Pimple Popper. And I said, if people are going to watch people pop pimples, then maybe they'd be interested in Bloody Teeth. And I had no clue what I was doing. And so I have a little bit of a way with branding and marketing. It's just kind of maybe part of who I am. And so I have a very close friend whose daughter had a stuffed animal called Broken Tail Guy. It was named aptly because the tail on the elephant was broken. And I thought it had a really kind of like an interesting ring to it. It was a nice flow. Right. So I came up with Bloody Tooth Guy. And so as I came up with Bloody Tooth Guy, Instagram was looking for content and I was providing content. And I had a lot of people in my little world, which is to say dentists, dental professionals, whatever, and probably some freaks also who like to see bloody teeth, like interested, and they were interacting. And so Instagram's algorithm was pretty simple at the time. It was like, if you put something up and people react, we'll show more people, blah, 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 whatever it is. And theoretically, that's what it still is. But now there's a lot of different censorship issues and stuff like that. But as Instagram was growing, they started allowing video and then stories and this and that. And at every turn, I was providing content. And so they were feeding my content to people. So I do feel like though I was putting out good content, they were helpful to me. Instagram as a platform was helpful because they saw a need and a like and whatever. So I grew it. I have 190,000 followers now. They're all legitimate. I've never paid for a follower or nothing like that. I've got pretty good interaction. The problem is sometimes because it's bloody, Instagram will put censorship stuff on there because they're protecting people from offensive material or whatever. It's become somewhat of an educational platform, surgically minded. There are a lot of younger dentists, you probably know this from your practice, a lot of younger dentists are surgically minded. When I came out, when we were younger, very few, you were either an oral surgeon or you weren't. And if you weren't, you didn't do oral surgery. Now all the younger surgeons do, all the younger dentists do a ton of their own surgery. And I don't know that Bloody Tooth Guy has anything to do with it, but they do absorb my content. And every single day I get, significant numbers of messages from younger dentists who thank me for kind of showing them how things are done and introducing them to techniques and technologies and different things that we as surgeons do. So it's been great for me. It's good for, it's good for my ego. My kids think, my little one in particular thinks it's pretty cool that her dad is like a little bit of a Instagram celebrity. And it's helped me. I mean, I have a deal with a surgical instrument company. I've had endorsement deals with implant companies, biologics. I mean, a ton of different stuff, and it's been oddly nice. So I enjoy it. It's great. People like it. Yeah,
it's cool. Good.
Enjoying the show so far? We've received fantastic feedback since we started, and we love your questions. Entrepreneurs face unique challenges, and as a corporate attorney and CEO, Bill understands that. Whether it's your first location, industry regulations, succession plans, or exit strategies for your business, the journey is rarely a smooth one. Mandelbaum Barrett PC offers listeners of this podcast a 20-minute consultation with their award-winning team. From mergers and acquisitions to litigation, they help entrepreneurs navigate new opportunities. Get invaluable insights and support to not just survive, but thrive. Click the link in the episode description or visit mblawfirm.com for details. Once again, it's mblawfirm.com. Now, back to our show.
Have you made business relationships through it as well? Like, like connections to other professionals and.
Oh my God. Yeah. People across the country. So I don't want to necessarily take it here, but we, with private equity, we started Max, this platform for oral surgeons by oral surgeons, and our second group in, well, not the second group, which was the original co-founders with us, but the third group in Coastal Oral Surgery. I met the founding partner, the managing partner through DMs on Instagram. So that was a true direct result of Bloody Tooth Guy. There is no way he would have known who I would have had to find another way to have met them. They're an exceptional practice. And that was 100% through Instagram, through Bloody Tooth Gang.
Yeah, the power of it really summed up right with that one opportunity, notwithstanding all the joy and fun you've had with it, that one relationship is probably worth every minute of time that you've spent developing it.
Absolutely.
So let me shift in a different direction. One of the things that our listeners like to hear about, and kind of has been a thing that over the years, representing entrepreneurs in all different verticals throughout the country, people usually seem to be able to point to a person or persons in their life that when they reflect back on their success professionally, or even just their success in life, that they had a mentor or mentors that were difference makers, that definitely moved the needle in terms of like where they ended up and how they got there. Anyone that you could share with our listeners that, you know, someone that's made a huge impact, and maybe tell a story about them?
Yeah, you know, I think like anybody who's at this point in our lives, there have been many people who have kind of either supported me or believed in me or went to bat for me or put me in a position where I had opportunity, where I otherwise would not have had opportunity. You know, I mean, to start from the beginning, my father was, again, despite not being, you know, very financially successful, was always a hustler. Like, he did anything he had to do to make it easier for me and my sister and for my mom as well. And so that was really very, very inspirational to me. I mean, his work ethic is second to none. And frankly, you could argue that, you know, mine has been pretty significant and probably somewhat negative that I work as much as I work. So I do think, you know, that was number one. When I was in residency, I'm sorry, when I was in dental school, there is a woman who is currently program director at NYU. Her name is Vasiliki Karlis. And when I didn't think things were going my way in terms of getting into an OMFS training program, she made a phone call for me. She called a guy named Stuart Lazow, who was the program director at Kings County, where I trained. And that phone call opened the door to get me into the OMFS training program. And so she believed in me, and Stu believed in me. And then when I came out of residency and I started practicing in northern New Jersey, and I was working for the other practice I mentioned earlier, and I started my own thing, and I was a kid, you know, I was in my early 30s. There were two dentists, a guy named Herb Benkel, who was a tremendous human being. I love him more than most. He was an endodontist in the area. And he in particular really kind of, he believed in me in such a way that his support for me and what I was doing and his network of people kind of bolstered me up and I believe had a tremendous yielded a tremendous amount of my success. And also a guy named Andy Sklover, who at the time was an orthodontist practicing here in northern New Jersey as well. Guy was on in his career, very reputable, and believed in me. And again, there are stories like this. There are stories like this throughout. And just people who, like, for no reason other than just trying to kind of help out the next guy, to, you know, who believed in me and gave me their support. I'll forever be indebted to them, and I can never repay what they've done for me.
Yeah, it's amazing how sometimes, you know, for lack of a better description, you know, you have a godfather out there who, for whatever reason, like you said, they have a certain love, admiration, confidence, and they change the game for you. You know, what's interesting is that, you know, as I conduct more and more interviews for the podcast, I cannot tell you how many times guests and, you know, entrepreneurs who are very successful have pointed to the work ethic of their parents and have also shared that, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, that they have worked really, really hard and continue to work really hard. And, you know, although maybe it's cliche, it's like, you know, there's no free lunch. And unless you win the lottery or you're born with a silver spoon in your mouth, which, by the way, most of my entrepreneurs were not, you know, hard work. And often so many people attribute it to the way they were raised, you know. So I think that's a nice tribute to your dad. So, Jay, you know, one of the things I wanted to talk about also was in terms of like, I don't like to call it a current event topic, but I'll call it a current event topic. What is something out there? It could be anything, you know, whether it's personal to you or business in general or the world in general, that you'd call a current event topic that you're either wrestling with or you're thinking about or you think people should be thinking about that's going on right now that you know, that you'd like to share.
I think probably the biggest thing I think about in terms of my concern, if you will, I mean, there's a ton, obviously, the world is an interesting place right now. And without trying to be too, you know, divisive in any way, I think what I see out there, and hopefully the tide is turning a little bit, what I see out there with the younger generation is that there's there's a significant closed-mindedness to open and honest conversation and to having a dialogue between disagreeing parties that is constructive and that gets you to a place that maybe you're compromising, not that one should compromise their beliefs, but that you can make it, you can understand that both sides of any argument have their appropriate points and that there is something in the middle of this person's algorithm and that person's algorithm that maybe lies somewhere in a sensible outcome. And so I think that's kind of it's broad based. It's not based on a current event necessarily, but it is something that I see societally that is concerning. The more we spend, and it's funny, right, with my social media, the more we spend on social media, the more we only see the one side that's fed to us based on a perceived preference or perceived understanding, based on historically what's been presented to us, the more concerned I am that people on the edges have the voices and the people in the middle are therefore going toward the edges because those are the only voices that they hear. And so I think about that really in a political way too. I always think like, why wouldn't we want more of a centrist leader than someone from the edge? But understanding that politically, you can't really win a primary from the center, even though you should probably govern from the center because you represent everybody. And so I just think kind of, I hope, and without sounding like like this kind of like idealistic utopian like person, which I would like it to be, but like the fact is I hope that we could come to terms with the concept that we have to figure out a way to see things through each other's eyes and get along, because ultimately the outcome of division is not good. That's what I think.
It's a great point. And, you know, it's interesting. I just read a piece not too long ago. You know, I went to Boston College for undergraduate and my daughter is now in her freshman year at Boston College. And I read a piece about Tip O'Neill, the former Speaker of the House, who was a Democrat and a Boston College graduate, which is why I was reading this piece. And it went into tremendous detail on his relationship. And it's in his biography too. His relationship with Ronald Reagan, who was the president of the United States when he was the Speaker of the House, with completely polar opposite political views, different parties, but personally, Tip was definitely more, you know, on the liberal side, and of course, the leader of a party, versus Reagan, who was probably one of the more conservative presidents. And they were the best of friends. They had a close personal relationship. And they passed tons of bipartisan legislation. So the concept is not unachievable, right? And I think that so many people, you know, when you look back at history and see how people did get along and did figure things out and did find ways to get to the center and compromise, you know, it applies in business too for entrepreneurs. Like I think one of the things I learned from my mentor that I try to do today, even when I think my mind is crystallized on something that we should do, and I don't know if you do the same thing, but I try to get consensus. Like there's other smart people in the room. Like, what do you guys think? Like, is this a good idea? Is it a bad idea? Is there another idea? You know, nobody corners the market on great ideas, you know, and you know, getting information and being able to make a better decision, whether it's your business or politics or anything. To me, it just seems like common sense. You know, I don't know. I think it's a great point, though. And I think you're right that it is something that we should be worried about. So, you know, we talked a little bit before about mentors and people that were really important to you. And there were a lot. What do you do as a leader, as a leader in both, you know, your business and life? What do you try to do to pay it forward? Are you conscious of kind of what those people did for you? And you know, do you consciously try to make a difference or move the needle for others? And how do you go about it?
I do. You know, I am very fortunate that I have so many, because I have the audience that I have through Bloody Tooth Guy, not just online, but like people who will come and shadow me and ask to see me and whatever it is. I actually find myself oftentimes kind of pontificating and giving advice on life. And most of it really comes down to like just always do the right thing, communicate open and honestly, be yourself, like very standard, easy kinds of things. You know, a lot of these kids, they're kids. I'm talking about people in their 20s and 30s. A lot of these kids, they see through Instagram and through social media these curated images of people who are trying to present a certain level of success. And it's difficult for them to really ascertain what's real and how they got there and whatever, because a lot of it is just absolute BS. And so for me, I really hammer home the time that it takes, so the investment in yourself, the investment in your business in the sense of like, you know, caring about the reputational equity that you build. And your reputation is everything. It takes years to develop and it takes moments to destroy. If you're, you know, if you're thinking about the small stuff, I speak to my associates who are now my partners who are younger about, you know, never really worry about the little thing. You have to worry about all the details, but don't worry. Like when I was younger, I was, let's say, maybe a little bit challenging as a middle schooler for my guidance counselor. And he told me, and it was, I didn't realize this was like a known statement. He said it to me though. So I thought that this was like the holy grail of information, you know, don't sweat the small stuff and it's all small stuff. Right. And I do sweat every little bit of everything, but I try to live in a grand way of like, don't worry about all that little stuff and realize just do the right thing every time. So I really do spend a lot of my time talking to younger dentists and younger surgeons, dental students. I was at an NYU event yesterday and I sat with three dental students and, you know, I said, come anytime, watch what I do, understand like the day to day. And I try to make introductions to people. Yeah, I do what I can in my space. You know, I think in my vertical, I do as much as I can to help those who are going to come after me, like build a bridge, if you will.
Yeah, no, and look, someday they may be on a podcast, and when they rattle through those names of the people who move the needle, you know, you may be your fingerprints, as they say, are going to be on their success, which is why that's the title of this podcast. So, what's your why, Jason? When you know, I mean, money's great. We all love to make money. That's part of being an entrepreneur, and it's fun, and it's a measuring stick, and all that. But it is not. You know, I've never met an entrepreneur yet who said, yeah, basically that's it. It all starts and ends with money for me. And that's why I do everything I do. No one's ever said that. Maybe someone will say it at some point. But you know, what's your why?
I think if your money is your focus, then you certainly will not achieve what you want to achieve. Because, you know, listen, so my why has changed, right? So my why has always been defined at like being the best at whatever it is that I am actually focused on doing, or really kind of changing the game, or kind of proving that I can do it. It's really kind of an internal why. But my why with Riverside Oral Surgery was very, very clearly to raise the bar on the patient experience and to build a practice that I could be very, very proud of, that I could walk around, you know, where I practice in Bergen County and be respected for what I did, both within the dental community and kind of in the community at large. That was the Riverside why. My Max why is very much because there was, as I saw, so there's this very, very negative, you know, managed care, corporate dentistry perception. And I don't think there needs to be. I do see some of the negative and I understand that, but I really thought that there was a void in the large scale, single specialty DSO landscape. And I felt that I wanted to fill that void. So for me, my max why is to be able to kind of redefine the way that people in healthcare, start with oral surgery, but healthcare see large scale practice. I don't think being a large business and being focused on patient care are mutually exclusive concepts. I think, in fact, the bigger you are, the more resources you can bring together to yield the best outcomes. So while there are downsides to being a bigger organization, like trying to scale culture and try to scale the patient experience, I really believe in my heart that doesn't need to have a negative connotation. I want to, you know, 20 years from now, you talk about fingerprints, I want, you know, Jason Auerbach to have been known as the guy who really led this charge in changing the way that large-scale healthcare is seen. It's lofty. We'll see if it could happen, but that's my why right now.
What's got you excited about the future? When you jump out of bed in the morning and you're thinking about what's next, what has you excited?
So many different things. You know, I'm excited about from a business perspective, I'm excited about the opportunities that are before me with Max and building this platform. I'm excited about really shaping the future of oral maxillofacial surgery and how it's practiced in the United States. I'm excited by next week watching my daughter get her driver's license if she passes that test, hopefully, which I'm sure she will. I'm excited to see my older daughter come home from school and hang out with me and spend time with my very good friends and my wife and my family. That's it. And actually, I'm looking forward to like traveling, I'm going to see fish in Mexico next week. So that should be all. When this airs, it will have already been, and I will have had a good time.
Awesome. Well, listen, I'm excited about watching to see what you're going to do next, whether it's as Dr. Jason Auerbach, the Bloody Tooth guy, dad, or whatever it ends up being, because I feel like I've kind of been honored to have a front row seat knowing you when you were an associate oral surgeon and getting your first practice and then watching all the things you've created and the lives that you've touched and how you're changing things in your profession. And it's pretty wild and exciting for me to watch it. So I can't thank you enough, Jason, for being on the show. And I think our listeners will really, really enjoy this episode.
I appreciate it. I just want to say this, Bill. I don't know how many people know your history, and I don't know, you know, the relationships that you have with the people who you've taped before and you will after. But, you know, obviously, I know you for the better part of 20 years or so. As I alluded to earlier, I met you because you represented, as well as you did, the surgeon for whom I worked. And as soon as that was done, I called you because I thought your work was so excellent. I was so impressed by the way you handled yourself and the situation that there was no question that for me that you were going to have to kind of be by my side for this journey. So you and Casey and Mandelbaum Barrett have been there for me from the very beginning. I mean, we had 3 employees at the time to where we are now and to where we're going to go. So I appreciate everything you do. I've watched you and your meteoric rise as well. So that's been very, very impressive. You and, like I said, Casey and your whole team you're all exceptional. And I really appreciate everything you do for me and for Max and Riverside and all the other personal stuff as well. So thank you.
Well, no, thank you. I'm very grateful and I really appreciate it. And I wish you continued success. And I'm sure that I'll see you soon.
You will. Thank you for everything.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Fingerprints on Success podcast. Make sure to hit subscribe on your chosen platform that you are listening to us on. If this episode made you think of someone, go ahead, take a screenshot and share this episode with them, or post it on your social media to share with your friends. You can catch the show notes for this episode and any mentioned links in the description of this episode. Mandelbaum Barrett PC specializes in partnering with successful business owners and proven entrepreneurs on all of their legal matters. Visit www.mblawfirm.com for more information. Once again, it's www.mblawfirm.com. We'll see you on the next episode.